She was among the original group of organizers that convened to form Black Lives Matter and continues to serve as a Los Angeles chapter lead and contributes to the national leadership. Dr. Abdullah also serves on the boards for the Black community, including Clergy and Labor Alliance and California Faculty Association in Los Angeles, and Strategic Concept in Organizing and Police Education. Her awards, recognition, and televised appearances are prolific. Dr. Abdullah, single mother of three young children residing in Los Angeles, please join me in giving a warm welcome to Dr. Melina Abdullah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I feel like this mic is far from my mouth because I guess I'm short. So I was hoping to just celebrate with you. Let me just make one correction. I'm on the board of the Strategic Concepts of Policy Education, of Organizing and Policy Education, not Police Education, because I don't believe police can be educated. I'm a police abolitionist. So that one I can't let slide, right? So thank you for having me. I was hoping to simply celebrate with you, and I am trying to get into a celebratory mood, but we are in the midst of a tremendous, tremendous struggle right now that has me a bit distracted, and so I'll get into a little of that towards the end of my remarks. But I'm going to try to kind of get into this celebratory mood because it is a time for celebration. 25 years is amazing. 25 years is amazing work. So thank you to all of you who've been struggling for justice for 25 years. And so of course I came to celebrate your 25-year anniversary with you, and I really came to celebrate with my friend and comrade and homie, for real, D. So I'm especially happy to be celebrating with Dee Peiwu, who's a longtime friend and comrade and organizer, and just an overall wonderful person to be in the struggle with. So I'm a labor baby, and I know everybody's going, we're all labor babies, right? But I'm a labor baby, meaning I'm a union baby, right? My father was a union carpenter in Oakland, California, where I was raised. And I love unions. I grew up loving unions because, so it wasn't just because unions do great work. So my dad was deeply involved in the union, right? And he'd always be at these meetings. And he was also a socialist organizer. So he'd always be at meetings, right? And some meetings were okay, but some meetings were better than others. So when he wouldn't be home in the evening, the next morning, we'd always wake up and have breakfast together real early in the morning. Those of you who are in the trades know that you get up really, really early and go to work really, really early, right? So I would get up early with my dad and we'd have breakfast. And if he wasn't there the night before, I'd ask him where he was and he'd say, I was at a meeting. And then my eyes would light up and I would go, what kind of meeting? Was it a union meeting? And my eyes would light up because if it was a union meeting, that meant there was a pastry sitting on top of the refrigerator for me. So unions were the best because they had sweets, right? So early indoctrination is really important, so I hope that you have your kids here with you. So when I became a college professor, one of the reasons that I chose to work at the California State University system is because we're unionized. We are unionized campuses. So I immediately joined the California Faculty Association, which is also a part of SEIU. Where's my SEIU folks, right? So I'm an SEIU member. And I joined and I became deeply involved in the struggle for rights, for workers' rights. And I'd always been involved in the struggle for workers' rights on my dad's picket lines and then on the picket lines of other folks. But finally on, struggling for my own rights as a worker. And recently we just won a fair contract. We were on the precipice of the largest strike in higher education history, and we settled a contract just a few weeks ago with the support of many of you. And so I've now been at Cal State LA for 14 years, even though I'm 29. Don't let the math fool you, right? And so I've been at Cal State LA for 14 years, and you know, I've been involved in CFA and in union work throughout that time. But I often felt like I think many people of color, many black folks especially, many women, many LGBTQ folks feel that I felt fragmented. I felt like within the union, I was doing work as a worker. But there was also other work that I had to do. So I'm a single black mom who lives in the Crenshaw District of Los Angeles. I have to struggle for the safety of my community and my children. I have to struggle for educational justice. I have to struggle for racial justice. I have to struggle for broader struggles of economic justice. I'm recognizing that Los Angeles is the city with the highest rate of homelessness in the entire nation, where 1 in 22 black men now find themselves homeless, right? And so these felt like kind of fragmented struggles that I had to engage in, and I felt in a sense kind of schizophrenic, like I was jumping from one thing to another. And while I was on campus and while I was at these union assemblies that we'd have 3 or 4 times a year, I would be struggling as a worker, but in other spaces I was struggling as a black woman or as a working class woman, and they didn't always feel aligned. And so I want to congratulate you also for recognizing that workers' rights and regular old people's rights, human rights, are connected struggles. They cannot be. They cannot be separate struggles. They're the same struggle because I'm always a worker. We are always workers, and we are always women, and we are always black people, and we are always working class people, and we're always queer. We are always all of the things that we are at the same time. So these struggles have to go on together. So I congratulate you for recognizing 25 years ago that you can't just be struggling for jobs. You have to be struggling for jobs with justice. Jobs with justice. And so I also want to congratulate you and thank you for pushing the rest of the labor community in that direction. One of the things that happened, so 3 years ago we convened to form Black Lives Matter. And on July 13th, 2013, many of you, I'm assuming like I, felt this overwhelming sense of kind of the revolutionary spirit for me of our ancestors bubble up in us, right? So when George Zimmerman was acquitted for killing Trayvon Martin, right? Something happened globally where we were able to see our own children's faces, our own faces in the face of Trayvon Martin. And we knew that something was wrong, and we knew that we couldn't sit home anymore. Right? So thousands of us in cities all across the country and all around the globe took to the streets. And I was one of those folks who took to the streets. And on July 15th, 2013, the three women who are the co-founders of Black Lives Matter, Patrice Cullors, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tometi, called about 30 of us together to have a meeting where we consciously decided that we were going to engage in a movement rather than a moment. We knew the kind of transformation that had to take place to keep other Trayvons from happening had to be not just episodic uprisings, not just 2 days, 3 days, not just a week, not even a year or two, as in the case of Oscar Grant. It had to be a shift in the way we live our lives, right? We had to live the justice struggle, and we knew that it's a long and a lifetime and a generations long struggle, and that's what we committed ourselves to doing. But here's where I think that you all pushed things. A year after we were founded, Mike Brown was murdered in Ferguson. And some of you all will remember that. Hopefully everyone will remember that. The murder of Mike Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And what happened there is kind of a recognition of ourselves as intersectional beings. And that happened through the work and the brilliance and the passion and the vision of Leslie McSpadden, Mike Brown's mother, who is a proud member of United Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW. And what we saw happen with the Ferguson uprising is unions recognizing that it's not enough to struggle for fair wages. It's not enough to struggle for healthcare benefits. It's not enough to struggle for fair contracts. We have to struggle for the lives of our members. And so we started to see unions step up. UFCW was among the first to step up. SEIU stepped up and sent about 600 black organizers from around the country, helped to send us out to Ferguson to do work with Ferguson organizers. And so we started to see the union work and the labor movement come together with justice struggles. And I'll say that that's part of what you kind of set the stage for. So that's something that we have to continue to push. So what I'm hoping we can do in your next 25 years, right, is more firmly ground that. Recognize that justice struggles have to be brought into our struggles for workers' rights, and I love this pledge card idea, the idea of getting in struggles that you don't perceive of as your own, but they are your own, right? So you might not. You might not think that Black Lives Matter means something to you because you ain't black. Right? But guess what? If black people ain't free, you ain't free. Right? So we absolutely have to make sure, as we struggle for labor rights, that from the very beginning we're reaching out to people who we don't think of as labor organizers. But guess what? Labor is everybody's issue. Labor is everybody's issue. So we have to involve folks from the beginning. Don't have some big old rally and then say, oh, you know what would be cool, to invite Black Lives Matter to come speak and hold up a sign and maybe do a die-in, right? We're not a gimmick, okay? So from the beginning, don't call us 2 days before the rally and say, can you speak? From the beginning, how do we build jobs with justice? How do we build for labor as a part of the overarching lives of our people, right? Similarly, how do we commit ourselves to getting out in the streets and struggling for justice beyond our own contracts, right? So I'm gonna share with you a little bit about why I'm distracted. So Black Lives Matter Los Angeles is the first chapter of the Black Lives Matter Network. We're the largest chapter, and we've been doing a whole lot of work to really challenge state-sanctioned violence, recognizing that state-sanctioned violence is an outgrowth of how the system is intentionally built, right? So to undo state-sanctioned violence means to undo white supremacist, patriarchal, heteronormative capitalism, period, right? Period, right? So our work is not liberal work. Our work is not even progressive work. Our work recognizes that the system has to be fundamentally transformed, right? And that poses a threat to many people, right? So those who are holding tight to this dying system, because the system is dying, make no mistake, we not only believe that we will win, we are going to win, and we are winning, okay? But those who are holding tight to this dying system, people like he whose name shall not be mentioned but is daring to run for president, right? People like him, you know, are not only do they feel the ground shaking beneath their feet, they are using every tool in their arsenal to make sure that our uprising is suppressed. And so what's happening right now, as we've gone from 30 folks who convened on July 15th, 2013, to now tens of thousands of folks who are actual members globally, right, in 40 chapters throughout the globe, what we're seeing is the targeting of our members. And so just this Tuesday, one of our members, one of our most visionary, brilliant young leaders, Jasmine Abdullah is the name that she's chosen for herself. The state knows her as Jasmine Richards. Was convicted, is the first black person to ever be convicted on felony lynching charges. So let me tell you what that means. As Jasmine Richards was leading her chapter, Jasmine Abdullah was leading her chapter of Black Lives Matter Pasadena in a peace march last summer, she witnessed the unjust, unlawful detainment of a black woman at the hands of Pasadena police who were standing near the park surveilling them, right? So they were surveilling the 15 to 20 Black Lives Matter members who were engaging in this peace march. So 15 to 20 folks, half of whom were children, right? They were basically surrounded by the police. They even had a police helicopter out. What a waste of taxpayer dollars, right? Police helicopter out watching 15 to 20 people. She witnessed the unlawful detainment of a black woman and rushed to her aid. In the rushing to her aid, they called that lynching. And they pulled out a 1933 bill, or 1933 law, that was passed initially to protect black people from lynching. The way that it's written, it says that anyone who tries to remove someone from police custody by means of a riot, so they were calling this assembly of mostly children a riot, right, is engaging in lynching. So it's a real perversion of this law. So Jasmine was convicted of this crime on Tuesday. She was immediately remanded into custody and now serves as our first political prisoner of the Black Lives Matter movement. She's set to be sentenced on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, June 7th, and faces up to 4 years in state prison. So I'm saying all of that to say, one, that's where my heart is right now. But two, they are coming for us. So as we rise up and we struggle for justice, we have to know that there is a backlash against us. And that backlash, the people who are engaging in this, they're the ones who have political power. They're the ones who have the money. But you know what we have? We have the people. We have the people. And so in the words of Fred Hampton, they can cage a revolutionary, but they can never cage a revolution, right? So the question becomes, are you willing to be the revolution? In the next 25 years, are you going to commit yourselves to fair contracts for your members only? Are you going to commit yourself only to the fight for 15? Are we going to commit ourselves to the fight for 15 and a union, right? Along with justice, real justice, for all of our folks in a holistic way. It's not okay to just earn $15 an hour and then walk home and wonder whether or not the police are going to shoot you or your children in the back, right? So we need for the next 25 years for Jobs with Justice to remember that justice is not just in the isolated spaces that we take up as workers. It's in the whole lives of our people. So we need you to do three things. My mama always taught me, when you have a room full of people, ask them to do something. So we need you to do three things. We need you to lift your voice. right? Because one of the things that they're doing with those who dare to struggle the most vigorously against injustice is they try to cast us as something that we're not. In that courtroom, when they convicted Jasmine Abdullah, aka Jasmine Richards, of felony lynching, the prosecutor compared Black Lives Matter to the KKK. So the question becomes, are you going to allow that kind of rhetoric to continue? Are you going to use your own voice at your kitchen tables, at your union meetings, at every space that you occupy to say, no, Black Lives Matter is necessary and my life is contingent upon the freedom of Black people, right? Things, and I know I'm a little over time. Two more things. We need you to use your bodies. There are a lot of us. There are a lot of us, and it's great that you're coming out for a chicken dinner, right? We also need you to come out into the streets, right? So as we engage in these struggles, when we talk about union power, one thing that unions do well is mobilize people. We need your body out there. So we got voice, we got body. The third thing that we need is we need your resources. We need your resources. Now, we know that many of us as workers don't have a whole lot of extra resource. I feel you. I got three kids and I'm a single mama, and I won't get into who my ex-husband is, but I'm doing a lot by myself, let me just say that, okay? So I'm not talking about those of you who are just struggling, I'm not talking about just your individual dollars, but if you have a dollar, we'll take it, right? I'm talking about the power of union resources. You all have things that we don't have. Black Lives Matter is not a nonprofit organization. Black Lives Matter is just a bunch of folks who decided it's time to get up. So we need your copy machine. Right? We need you to help us make phone calls. We need you when your union is trying to figure out what to do with your dues. We need you to help sponsor buses to go places, right? We need you to do that kind of work because you are part of us and we are part of you. We need your voice, we need your body, and we need your resources. And then lastly, I need you to stand with me. So you're finished eating. So I'm gonna ask you to indulge me in just a second, for just a second, because this is how we get the will to fight on, right? Will you stand with me, literally, physically, right now in this moment? I'm gonna ask you to close out my time with you by engaging in a chant that we say at the close of every Black Lives Matter meeting that was written by political prisoner in exile, Sister Assata Shakur. And I'm going to say it three times. We're going to do it in three different tones, so just repeat after me. It is our duty to fight for freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and protect one another. We have nothing to lose but our chains. It is our duty to fight for freedom.
It is our duty to win.
We must love and protect one another.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
Get your fists up. It is our duty to fight for freedom.
It is our duty to win.
We must love and protect one another.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
Ashe, thank you so much. Jobs with Justice.